Welcome to the Engaged Midwife Podcast. This is Missy.
And this is Kara.
And we're together.
We are. It's so exciting.
So these next few episodes of the podcast will be us sitting next to each other, which rarely happens and is very fun. So anyway, holiday season.
Yeah.
Conference season.
Yeah. Lots of travel and busyness, but lots of good things are happening.
It's true. So this is my topic, so I feel like I should introduce it.
Sure.
We were talking today, you and I were talking today, about just problems in clinical areas that get us into trouble and or provide opportunities for improvement.
Right.
Or just contemplative, I guess, strategies about clinical practice. And the one that I want to talk about is communication. And it's sort of, that's a big, broad thing to talk about. But I also think that when we talk about it, we can parse out, I think, pieces of it that are important. So, you know, I work in resident education and with midwifery students and in a big academic health center, as you have also done.
Right.
But also, so what does communication look like with our collaborators? What does it look like with our student learners? What does it look like with our nurses? What does it look like with our office staff? And how do we facilitate those kinds of things? And I think when we talk about power as a word, right? Power is whether you're on the same level as someone and there's not a power differential,
right?
Versus nurse provider dynamic per se, or student nurse dynamic. I think there are all kinds of things to be said.
There are. And there's a fair amount of interprofessional play here too, because you're talking about different professions and do they understand each other's roles and do they have respect and understanding of each other, which really comes down to how we communicate.
The word respect means so much to me because I have a much higher opinion of people who come from outside of my department and don't understand what I do, that ask a lot of good questions and defer to our judgment when it comes to like what's happening in our unit.
Right.
But I do think there is something about respect and but I also think sometimes that word can be thrown around,
right,
in a way that is not positive.
Right.
Right.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. And that it isn't something that is only deserved when you've reached a certain age or have so many years of experience or a certain level of education, that there is a level of respect and professionalism that comes just from understanding each other's professions and what we contribute to patient care.
It's such an old school concept, mm-hmm. right?
It is.
That nurses were subservient to physicians. I mean, not that long ago, and still happens in some places.
Right. Unfortunately.
And, or even nurses, older nurses, seasoned nurses towards younger nurses.
Right.
That concept of eating their young. I think there's so many things that have changed in the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years for the positive in right. that way. I think now what I am observing is more nurses willing to mentor younger nurses because they want them to be good.
Right.
And they want them to not burn out. And it's no longer like earning your stripes or, you know, earning your ability to be someplace. That's not really the culture anymore.
In some respects, I'm seeing that a little bit in midwifery too, because I think we have an aging midwifery population. And I see like preceptors are like, oh, I really want to help mentor or nurture this younger person coming along because I'm tired. I'm going to need someone to replace me eventually. I need to support others because it was also provided to me when I was new. So I hope we're seeing that change in midwifery too.
And we have had a podcast episode on mentoring mm-hmm. and what that looks like and how you effectively mentor. So I don't think that's the topic here.
No.
I think that our topic today is more focused on just how do you talk to people? Mm-hmm. How do you get your point across? How do you ask for things in a way that makes people want to cooperate and collaborate? Or just how do you get things done
right.
effectively
right.
as you're trying, you know, in your, whatever your work environment is. I mean, part of this is relationship, right?
It is.
Part of it is, do they know you? Do they know how you practice? And so I think the first concept that I would like to throw out is just the idea of being able to make statements that don't have any feeling in them.
Mm-hmm.
They're factual, but they don't contain feelings. So for example, there is something that I do in birth that nobody else on my unit does. And that is, I don't start my Pitocin till after my placenta is out.
Okay.
It's just something I've always chose to do. And I have appreciated the outcomes of waiting until my placenta is out to start my PIT, my postpartum PIT. And so now the way I communicate that is that after my baby is out and I'm getting ready to birth my placenta, I'm, you know, holding onto the cord and waiting for the placenta to come. I just look at my nurse and I say, hey, I do this different than everyone else. I run my Pitocin at 999 for the whole bag after placental delivery. Factual, there's no feeling, there's no, I think this is a better way to do it. It's just, this is what I do.
And it's calling out that you might do something, that you recognize that what you do is a little bit different than the culture on the unit or what they're used to.
Right. And also what I've learned is, like, if the nurses have questions about it, I'm also super happy to answer why.
Yes.
There's a rationale to why I do the thing, but I think part of it is just communicating, this is what I do. And it doesn't have to have a tone behind it. Mm-hmm. It's just a very factual statement. I think sometimes we let emotion overcome the way that we communicate, which makes our communication then not effective. Mm-hmm. So I think a really good sort of standard of, like, first step is, if you can say it mm-hmm. in just a factual way, mm-hmm. then you can, it just comes across how you intend it to.
Right.
And not hurting anyone's feelings or making anybody feel not smart. That is never my intention.
Right.
Right. Is to tell somebody something to make them feel stupid. That's not cool. But it's, I'm always trying to say, like, there is a method to my madness mm-hmm. and I would love to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you think of any examples?
I think I'm much like you in just trying to be really clear and not assume people know what I mean. Which I think it comes, sometimes I think it can seem like you're being too simple or dumbing it down, but it's really that I just want us all to be on the same page. And I think it makes it clearer and easier for everyone when we speak that way to each other. So
when you said there's something like that, we say things too simply, I'm like, there is something to simplicity sometimes though.
Right.
I really would like for you to do this. As a kind of aside to that though, I think there is something about being too sweet about it. Like, I also believe that sugarcoating all of your communication is also not the way to go.
I'm not really a sugary sweet person.
Oh, me? Really, Kara? Really? You're not sugary?
No, I'm not.
I think it depends on who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
But I also recognize in myself that I'm somebody who wants to be liked.
Oh, 100%.
And so then sometimes my communication comes out probably nicer or sappier than I want it to, because I want people to like me.
I think I can sometimes come across more passive than I really am as well, because it's wanting it to not hit too hard or be that you're mean or that kind of thing.
Or that you're not listening.
Right.
We talked about this earlier too, about the idea that nurses tend to put themselves in a position where they are trying to advocate for their patient, because maybe they think that there's nobody else there to advocate for them.
Right.
And I just want to wear a t-shirt that says, like, I am an advocate for your birth.
Right.
The birth that you need to have. It's not about me and my agenda as a provider. I am an advocate for my patient too. So if the nurse wants to be an advocate, then you should be it should be a partnership.
Right.
Versus nursing versus providers. Mm-hmm. And I will say, you know, I was a nurse before I was a midwife. I was a labor and delivery nurse before I was a midwife. And I do understand that power struggle.
Sure.
The differential.
Sure.
We talked about the word power and what that means. And I think that there certainly was that, mm-hmm. right? Especially when there was a lot of pressure to get people delivered for whatever reasons. But I feel like now in my professional practice, I am an advocate for my patient. I want them to have a vaginal delivery. I want them to have a vaginal delivery that they want to have.
Right.
I don't want them to have the delivery I want them to have. I want them to look back at their birth and be like, it was just what I wanted. So that partnership, I think, between nursing and providers is important. But I also think the other part of this that we had a conversation about is the word orders.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We write orders. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, it is oftentimes directing someone else to do something in caring for the patient. And taking orders can feel kind of uncomfortable.
I also don't like the idea of ordering someone to do something.
Right, right.
And that's our job. And it's also nursing's job to follow through with those things.
Instead of a nursing care plan, maybe we should, instead of calling them orders, it should be like a provider care plan. And these are all of the interventions.
And you know, oftentimes nurses do so many more interventions than what we order. For example,
oh, 100%.
They'll say, oh, I've done all these position changes. I've done flying cowgirl. I've done a side lying release. I've done all the things to help this baby rotate. I've done hands and knees. Oh, your patient's hypotensive. I went ahead and gave a 500 bolus. I mean, nurses are smart.
Well, I mean, nurses certainly don't have to be told how often to take vitals or turn, cough, and deep breathe either. Those are nursing orders and nursing interventions to prevent complications. But so often they're listed in the standing order set, right?
I think the biggest fight that I see between providers and nursing is management of PIT.
I was just going to say the same thing. It's that active management of labor and Pitocin and cervical ripening that tends to be the big, I was going to say conversation starter, but maybe it shuts down conversations. I'm not sure.
Again, I think if you go back to what we said in the beginning, which is, are you using facts to explain your position and are you backing them up with evidence? So your patient's cervix hasn't changed in X number of hours. You would like more aggressive management of the PIT. You would like adequate contractions or an adequate pattern or adequate NVUs. Like this is my goal. And this is what we need to do to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it becomes a sticky situation when nursing doesn't think that the patient needs or wants or that the baby can handle more Pitocin. And, you know, as a provider, these decisions for us are never made in isolation. It's not like, oh, let's PIT to distress. That is not something that is a thing.
Right.
Anymore.
Asterisk.
Anymore. It's kind of like steroids in baseball. It's just not something that we do anymore, right? We don't PIT babies to distress. We have a rating system for looking at fetal monitoring. You know, we don't PIT category 3 strips. You know, we cautiously do interventions with category 2 strips. It does matter what your baby looks like. But I think the idea of, you know, we are all trying to get to the same goal. Let's, you know, keep our eye on that when we're communicating, I think, between providers and nurses.
Absolutely. And if we think about patient-centered care and the patient being part of the team as well, in interprofessional education for years, we've talked about like, who's the captain of the team? And is it the physician? Is it the nurse? And is it the patient even? You know, who's the quarterback? Who's the coach calling out the plays? Those kinds of things. But really, ultimately, it's all about sharing information, having good communication, and really thinking about what the wishes and desires and best care can be for the patient at the center.
The hard part is the aftermath.
Right.
Of right. Some of this, because I think it's easy for us to get our feelings hurt, for nursing to get their feelings hurt. I think it leads to a lot of like back talk and just conversations about the conversations, the meeting after the meeting.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the idea that you know, not wanting to be sugary sweet, I usually am well known in my circle of colleagues and friends of the person that will mention the elephant in the room when there's an elephant in the room. And so I'm also someone that will call it out and say, hey, I'd like to have a conversation with you. And this might be a little bit difficult, but I want to just like go back and talk through how things just went. Never in the patient room or in front of others, but really wanting to have a clear communication and conversation about how I felt, how they felt, and how we can do better next time.
I wish that was the case in every situation.
Yeah, it's not always.
I also wish that others would recognize like when they need to use a filter.
Yes.
And one of the things that makes me insane is questioning anyone's judgment in front of a group of other people.
Right.
And I don't, if that's a nurse questioning a provider or a provider questioning a nurse, like right. I just feel bad about it. And I think it's easily avoided. Mm-hmm. The filter is hard at 3 a.m.
It is. It is. And under a lot of stress and a lot of work and the next patient and the next triage and the next everything, it is really hard. And people are overworked and they're tired and it can be really hard. But one resource I would really recommend, if you haven't taken a look at it, there's a book out there called Difficult Conversations. I think it's excellent in coming up with some of the words to use when you need to have difficult conversations with someone about how an interaction went or how you might improve it for next time. It's one of my favorite resources.
I would love for every conversation to go well.
Yes.
But I work night shift and I know that's not going to happen. I would like also for all of my residents to leave residency feeling confident about their skills. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes pushback is hard, right? Pushback from nurses. Residents are doing what they're told to do by attendings.
Right.
Or what they've learned to do from attendings.
Right.
And so when they make decisions, they're not making decisions in isolation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel this communication thing for me, it's been a struggle my whole career, like how to have conversations without emotion. Mm-hmm. And you and I are both people who know both of us in our personal and professional realms know that we are also easy to tears.
Yes.
And sometimes I feel like I want in the middle of one of these situations that I'm just like, why are you not listening? And then that makes me tearful and I hate that.
Right. Right. Oh, I mean, tears can come when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm frustrated, but some of the most trying times are feeling like you aren't respected, feeling frustrated by a lack of professionalism, things like that. When communication breaks down, that can be some of the most distressing.
And nobody wants that.
No.
And I also think it's interesting as midwives or advanced practice providers, whatever role you're in, when we have upwards conversations. So we've kind of been talking about nursing communication, but when I'm thinking about when I'm talking to physicians, either in my specialty or out of my specialty, and, you know, I don't know their specialty. I've spent 20 years of my life doing breasts and vaginas. Mm-hmm. If you have breasts and a vagina, I'm pretty sure I can take care of you. But
if the issue is related to the breasts and the vagina, yes.
And the uterus, yes. Some ovaries, maybe.
Right, right.
Throw those in there. What I'm saying is like, if I have called somebody, I already recognize my limitation.
Right.
I don't need it to be brought to my attention that I have a limitation about something. Mm-hmm. If I call derm, it's because I don't know what that is. I mean, if I call cardiology, it's because I have a serious concern. I had a patient the other day whose heart rate before pushing in first stage was like 185.
Oh my gosh.
It looked like sinus sac. She didn't feel terrible, but I was like, I need somebody to tell me she can push.
Sure.
Because I don't feel good about second stage with a heart rate of 185. Don't feel good about it. So I think for anybody who works with physicians and does a lot of collaboration, just like, they should know that we don't have the answer to this. We might have part of the story and part of the information, but the likelihood is that we are trying to recognize a limitation that we need your help with.
And I think That is another opportunity where just being really clear and making the request simple can be what you need. So instead of like beating around the bush and like giving so much clinical detail, be like, here's the clinical information that's really important for you to know. And I need your help in A, determining if this patient is stable for second stage of labor. B, should I have a different medication plan? I mean, whatever the issue is, being really clear of like, I need your help with this. Not that you're asking them to take over all of the care. Not that you're asking to like step away and abandon the patient. Just this is what I need from you so that I can take better care of the patient.
I tell students when I'm working with them in the clinical setting, I need you to come up with a plan and come to me with the plan and then ask me if there's anything else I think you should add.
Right.
So I try to do that when I go to my physician colleagues and I say, I know that this strip doesn't look great. Here's what I'm doing about it. Is there anything else you'd like me to consider?
Right. And, you know, for some people that can be difficult, but if you really take it back to those simple, I always think back to like team steps and SBAR and, you know, walking through so many of us that have been caring for patients in labor and pregnancy and so forth for so long, you have your standard way of saying this age patient that's a G3P202, you know, whatever it is. It couldn't be 202, what, you know, anyway. You have a standard way that you communicate and you walk through, like, here's my assessment and this is my plan. Do you have any suggestions for additions or changes? That's a really great way to communicate. And it makes it clear to everyone what you're asking for.
Still okay to say, I don't know.
It is okay to say, I don't know.
It's clear. It's okay to say my patient's a G3P2 and her baby is not in the pelvis and she's in active labor. I have tried all the things. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. But that's still very clear. And like, these are the interventions I've tried. This is my assessment of the situation and I need your help.
Right. Right. I think this thing about communication is a life skill, right?
Right.
That as women, and I know we have, you know, nurse practitioners and midwives that are male, but as women, it also is a power differential sometimes. Mm-hmm. I also think as little girls, we weren't taught to speak up.
Right. Right.
I was reading my third grade report card literally yesterday, and the back of it said something like, Melissa's extremely bright and she's made great strides this year. She talks too much and she's going to need to learn to control herself.
Yeah.
Like written in my third grade teacher's beautiful scrawling script. And I was like, I wonder if she knew now what my big mouth has gotten me into.
I know. I love it when I see the memes, although it makes me sad as well about to all the other girls out there that were told they talk too much or that they were bossy or this, that, or the other. It's so true that we were quieted and shushed so often.
And I think the difference here when we're talking about communication is, can you be assertive without being aggressive?
Amen. Yes.
And can I be assertive without being a bitch?
Yeah.
And I think that it depends on the context, because there will still be people that when you are assertive about what you think about something, they will still think you're a bitch.
Agreed. Agreed. And so it is it's walking a fine line. But then that's where it's sometimes nice to have a conversation later about, it appeared I was watching and it felt like you felt like I came across too strong. Here's why I said the things that I said. Can you explain more or something along those lines, but not ever right there in front of everyone. And certainly not in front of patients or other nursing staff or physician partners. I like to have those a little bit more off to the side.
What is it? Instead of telling little girls they're bossy, tell them that they have leadership skills.
Right. Right. I will say, so, you know, you were talking about how it's sometimes the difference between like us as providers and the nursing staff or us and our physician colleagues. I've been in situations where I was working with someone that hadn't worked with a midwife before. And it was very clear to me in the situation with how things were managed in the patient care situation. They had no idea what I was capable of and kind of, I say, hip checked me out of the way. And so later, you know, in the moment you take care of the patient, you do the things, you don't raise, you know, ruffle feathers. But afterwards, and I think I did it via email, I just reached out and said, I'm not feeling good about how this went, and I'd really like to be able to chat with you about it. And we had an amazing conversation in their office, even I think it was like a week later, and they literally had no understanding of the midwife role. They hadn't been around midwives. They weren't educated in a place that had midwives. They'd never worked with me before, all of these different things. And they were like, I had no idea, Kara. I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I could tell that you didn't know. And I'm so glad we had this conversation. So I think we have to be advocates for ourselves in some of those situations. And we have to remember that sometimes the people that are communicating with us and struggling are also just trying to advocate for themselves or for their patients as well. So sometimes it's good to center all of us again back on what the goal is.
I love the idea of an email, because sometimes I don't have the words in a situation to articulate how I'm feeling without being emotional.
Well, and the quick to tear person was really glad that it was a week later, because there wasn't quite as strong of emotion. I think we may even both have a shirt that says something similar, but it's like, I speak up even if my voice shakes a little. And it's so true. I even hear myself sometimes, and inside my head, my voice is so shaky. But the more I keep talking, and the more often that I do it and speak up for myself or speak up for my patient or advocate, it does get easier.
If you don't speak up for yourself, it won't ever get easier. Mm-hmm. And people will assume that you are quiet, introverted, not assertive. There are things that come with that. Mm-hmm. I recently also sent an email about a week after a situation and was just like, we have to debrief this. Like, I don't want the next shift that we're on together to be like this.
Right.
And again, it led to a very positive, not in person, but just an email exchange that I felt good about afterwards. But I also think the thing that bothered me about that situation was that there were conversations happening about what was going on that night, sort of behind your back in front of your face. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was meant to be passive aggressive, but it felt very like judgy about what was happening. And I think we also need to be careful, like, if you're unhappy with something that's going on, that you don't like turn to the person next to you and say, well, this shouldn't be going this way, because there are other people involved.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then that leads to just not good teamwork or communication for that matter. So, I mean, I think that it's just a concept to keep in your head is like, if you need to have a conversation, have it, but don't have it with somebody else. You should be having it with a person who it's affecting or it's affected by.
One of the skills I was also taught a while back, it's kind of an advocacy inquiry kind of idea of approaching it more with like I statements of, I heard this, I felt this. And then coming to follow that up with inquiry of like, I'm curious if you had a different intention, or I'm curious if you meant to say this or do this. And it really is more about my feelings, not that I'm projecting that you did something wrong. It's more of like, this is how I interpreted it, and I'm not sure that I got it quite right. Can you help me understand? And that is much less threatening to people. I like that idea.
I think when you're new someplace as well, mm-hmm. just establishing the kind of communicator that you are and like your investment into that thing also helps people like just get to know you.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, I've only been in this, my current position for almost a year, and I'm still working on like, how do I communicate with some people and how do I communicate with other people and establishing who you are. And if you're the person who's been there for a long time, being the one who like is able to self-manage the best.
Yes. Yes. So one of the things I also wanted to mention, Missy, just as you were talking, is that it's also good to have your person that you can call to bounce ideas off of, or to get an outside perspective, or sometimes an insight. So that could be your more senior midwife in your own practice that knows all the players and can give you some background information or things that have worked well in the past. It could be when I call you and say, X, Y, and Z just happened and I need you to talk me off the ledge, and having that outside perspective, and you're like, Kara, calm yourself down. Now, I don't think you've ever really.
I don't know that I've ever told you to calm yourself.
I don't know.
Ever worked when I say Kara.
No. And my husband also knows calm that down. Does not work. But I'm saying, like, sometimes it's nice to have an outside perspective. And I know there's been times that I've been like, well, I don't know that that's what they meant or those kinds of things when we've talked with each other. So having that person that you're bounce ideas off of, it also gives you a moment to just take a beat and not respond so emotionally.
Well, take a beat and walk away.
Yeah.
Which is my thing. Like, I have a hiding place on my unit where I know I can like call somebody. It's like my safe space. I think this has been a theme through several of our podcast episodes, which is like phone a friend.
Yes. Yeah.
It's so important.
We're not, thank goodness, we're not on a deserted island with no way to communicate with the outside world, right?
Yeah, I have to share a funny story because this happened a couple of days ago. Another colleague was saying this and I was like, oh, I get this. I feel this. Sometimes my husband is totally my person.
Yeah.
And he should be.
Sure.
But he doesn't understand what's happening on labor and delivery. If I say vagina, his brain kind of turns off. He will though say like, how many centimeters is she? Like,
is she a multi?
Do they have it? They have enough baseline information that they can do some things, right?
Right.
Tim and Bob. But there are days when I have to call him. And so my colleague Lisa was saying, I just had to tell my husband, I don't need you to fix this. I just need you to listen.
Oh, because that's perfect.
But our partners also are people who we turn to a lot and say, because they're fixers. Our husbands, our partners want to take care of us. So they want to fix things for us. I don't need you to fix this. I just need you to listen.
Yeah.
I don't need a solution. I don't need to problem solve. This is not a bounce off ideas situation. I just need you to sit there and listen.
It's just a release, right?
And that could even be your person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I just need you to listen to this and be empathetic.
Yeah.
I need nothing else.
Yeah. I love it.
It's a good strategy.
It is. And I think it's a nice way to wrap up, you know, a lot of different things that we've hit on in this conversation, but communication is so important professionally. It's so important in our role as midwives and caring for patients and working with so many other great healthcare professionals that also really want the best for the patients as well.
It sets a tone.
It does.
For who you are as a provider.
Mm-hmm.
It gains you respect yes. with your colleagues and the people that you work with every day. And it only will benefit the patients that you take care of.
Agreed.
Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Engaged Midwife Podcast. We can't wait to talk to you again soon.
Take care.